Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. You've seen the headlines on biznews.com, watched and listened to the interviews on BizNews TV and BizNews Radio. So now let's talk about what the latest developments mean for your money. This is the Editor's Desk exclusive analysis for BizNews Premium members. Today's Monday, the 5th of January, 2026. I called it 2025 on the Daybreak show this morning, but oh, well, cut me a break, you know. You do tend to forget that you've moved on a year, especially if you're rubbing the sleep out of your eyes at 5 a.m. I'm really glad to have you with me. Talking about that 5 a.m. start, there's been a really good response to our Daybreak show. What happens is that every morning I get up, well, before the crack of dawn, and provide the latest overnight news and a summary of what happened in South Africa the day before. Not news, but context on what's going on. It's called the BizNews Daybreak. It is a podcast, and we also reproduce the podcast on our YouTube channel. So you can get it, if you prefer, on BizNews TV, but be aware there's no pictures there. There's no talking heads or any kind of images. It's just a radio signal kind of thing. And that is done specifically so that we can get the news to you as soon as possible in the morning. The real intention there is quite obvious. Most people listen to audio on their way into the office. It is a tradition in South Africa that began with when radio was introduced to South Africa and when the highways got clogged up. The morning drive, as it's called in radio, in the radio industry, accounts for well over, or used to anyway, account for well over 50% of the audiences of the day. It's a little bit like if you can imagine a hill. You get to the top of the hill by about 7:30 in the mornings, 8 o'clock, and then it starts declining. And that's what happens to radio listenership anyway. And the same thing with audio. As we do know, the old by appointment listening and viewing is now very much on the way out. We now have a situation where it's on demand. And what that means is we prefer to consume our media, and certainly the broadcast media, audio and visual, when we want to watch it or when we want to hear it, not when some radio station or some television station would like to give it to us. And so that's what we're doing with the Daybreak. We're giving it to you in good time for your morning drive into work. And that is why there are no pictures included when you go onto BizNews TV. So please don't expect any there. I would suggest that you, as a premium member, would join the WhatsApp channels or just double check on your WhatsApp interactive channel options so that you can then not only follow the debates that are going on there, and they are vibrant and they've continued all the way through December. There's no rest, it seems, for those of us who are fixated by the news cycle. But you'll find the latest update there, and of course in the BizNews Daily Insider newsletter, which is distributed now a little later than we used to. We used to get it out at 5 a.m., but it now includes the BizNews Daybreak links, and that we get to you, well, we do our best efforts to get that to you by about 6:30 a.m. in the morning. Okay, what are we talking about on the editor's desk today? Well, it is a new year, so happy new year. If I haven't told you this or suggested it to you already, 2026 is going to be quite a year. We've already seen an extraordinary kickoff with Donald Trump sending in his Marines, I think. We're not sure, not absolutely sure yet how the whole military exercise was conducted, but something like 150 aircraft were used in it, and a half dozen Marines are being given the credit for snatching Nicolas Maduro and his wife from their palace in the middle of Caracas and taking them back to the United States, where they are now facing charges on drug-related issues. It's not the first time that the Americans have done this. In fact, 100 years ago, they had something called the Monroe Doctrine, which said that any issues that happen with governments in the Western Hemisphere, in other words, North and South America, they reserve the right as a nation, legally, to go in and, well, address them. And that the most recent example of this was with General Noriega, you might recall, in Nicaragua some years, a couple of decades ago. So it's not unprecedented, but it has been sent shockwaves through the world. Here we have a president in the United States who was well known around the trading floors anyway as the taco man. Trump always chickens out. Well, with a smaller country like Venezuela and with a strong motivation, as Donald Trump clearly has in this case, there's no taco involved here. He sent in the Marines and that was it. There's an excellent piece on BizNews today from our partners at The Economist, which looks into it. They have been covering this really well, and we have published a couple of pieces on BizNews on this topic. But the latest focus by The Economist's team is on what they call Donald Trump's Great Venezuelan Oil Gamble. You'll find the article on biznews.com today. It goes back to the sense of vengeance to a degree that Trump exuded in his initial statements. And this refers to 18 years ago when Nicolas Maduro's predecessor and mentor, Chavez, nationalized assets belonging to US and Western companies worth $60 billion back then. So you can imagine that those owners of those assets have been smarting. They get a businessman in the White House. They impress upon him that this is an illegitimate regime, and they get his buy-in that if Venezuela were to return to health, the country as a whole would be a different place. Now, of course, here in South Africa, we are seeing outrage, not just from the ANC, but extremely so from the EFF, where there is a great love for Chavez and the National Democratic Revolution, or their version of it. It's called the Bolivarian Revolution. And so as a consequence, not surprising to see statements coming out from the EFF and their partner, if not in wearing the same clothes, but their philosophical partner, Jacob Zuma's MK party, both of whom are outraged at the American action. It's good to remember, though, that South Africa is really a mosquito in the global environment, and when the great powers start getting active, it's usually in the best interests of the little ones to just stay on the sidelines. Or if you're going to bet on one side or the other, be pretty sure that you're making the right bet. And that's what I covered in Boardroom Talk this week, and that podcast is up on BizNews Radio, and the transcript you will find on biznews.com as well. But getting back to The Economist story, Venezuela's oil production is down from around 3 million barrels a day before Chavez decided to nationalize the assets of the international companies to around 1 million barrels a day. And this is really scary for the population of Venezuela, because the country has the biggest oil reserves in the world by some margin, bigger even than Saudi Arabia. In fact, it has got 1/5 of total oil reserves on this planet Earth, just in that little area. That means that Venezuela should be one of the wealthiest countries on Earth. Its population should be should be the happiest, but the Bolivarian Democratic Revolution has actually made them one of the most unhappiest, with more than 7 million Venezuelans having left the country because it's impossible to live there. Poverty has shot through the roof from being the richest country in South America. It's now one of the poorest. And, we have people in South Africa who want to repeat what's happening there. The responsibility truly does vest on those of us who do read and who do remain informed to understand exactly what's going on in Venezuela and to explain things like The Economist tells us that to just get Venezuela back to where it was 15 years ago, let alone to become the preeminent oil producer in the world, which it should be with all the reserves that it has, just to get back is going to take a lot of time and $110 billion in capital expenditure. Now, we know capital is cowardly, and unless there's stability and a guarantee that you won't have another Bolivarian revolution just around the corner, that $110 billion ain't going to get in there. It's a great story and well worth reading on the site. In a similar vein, another must read is by Rashir Sharma, who's looked at the 10 top trends for 2026. So of all the hundreds, if not thousands, of commentators who provide their forecasts on what the new year is going to hold, why should we highlight something from Rashir Sharma? Well, he is the author of the best-selling Breakout Nations book, a book that is prescribed reading at business schools and certainly has been recommended to me by many people whose views I respect. I can pass on that suggestion to you as well. And if only Pretoria were to have that as a prescribed work, well, we might be in a different place. But it is what it is. You can't force people who don't read to start reading and educating themselves in what is really happening in the world, particularly if they are aligned with a particular ideology. Again, in my boardroom talk this week, I said, sheepers, ideology is expensive. It was a bit like that lovely saying that if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. But back to Rashir Sharma. He is a well-respected investor, best-selling author, and a global strategist. He's also the chair of Rockefeller International. So he's a guy that writes for the Financial Times from time to time. We tend to republish under license those articles. So as a premium member, you've probably come across his name before, but this is one of his best pieces, certainly one of the best I've seen. And of those 10 trends, I'm not going to mess up your enjoyment, but there are a few that I'd like to just highlight here very quickly for you, if only to whet your appetite. The first one that is worth looking at is he says that the AI bubble, artificial intelligence bubble, stocks bubble, is now ticking all the boxes, and not in a good way. But he says that the bursting of the bubble is going to require liquidity drying up. So it's not that Sharma tells us that AR stocks are going to continue rising indefinitely, but he says that they're in danger territory. And were we to see some external shock to the US system, or indeed interest rates no longer being cut but being increased, then that'll be a signal that will probably end the bubble. And he gives some very good examples of how this has happened with other bubbles in the past, going way back to 1722, I think it is, with the South Sea bubble, when the Netherlands banks decided to cut off credit. Another big trend that he talks about for the year ahead is the way that foreigners are really on the edge when it comes to supporting the United States economy. And that last year, they injected $1.7 trillion into the US, enough alone to cover the deficits there. and the deficits on the trade that the US has with the rest of the world. Again, he says the problem is once this reverses. So some big, big red flags, but go and read it and get your own insights. On the upside, good news is quality stocks, which had their worst year since 2004. So their worst year in 21 in terms of relative performance on the US markets last year. The view that Sharma gives us is that quality stocks will make a comeback in 2026. He also warns about the dumping by China of its products in global markets. This is a big issue in trade, and particularly for us here in South Africa. We've aligned ourselves very strongly with Beijing for reasons best known to those in Pretoria. And Beijing has been dumping all over the world because it's no longer enjoying the access it used to have into the United States. So it makes sense. You're producing a heck of a lot of this stuff. You've got problems in your own economy. The economy there is slowing down fast. And, they've got a big population, lots of unemployed people that they need to keep happy. And so you look for markets outside of the United States. South Africa is a small market, a tiny market, actually. It's about under a quarter of a percent of global GDP, whereas the US is sitting at 26%. So it just puts it into perspective for us, how small we are in the global picture. But then if you look at South Africa and the potential to dump here, although we're a small market, we're a pretty easy one to get into because we have a very friendly government, or as far as if you're a Chinese businessman's concerned. And that is an issue that we in South Africa should be taking seriously. Rishesh Sharma, again, looks into that in some detail. And then on politics, he makes the very strong assertion based on the trends that South America is moving to the right. Already Argentina, Chile, and Ecuador voted for conservative leaders. And this year, it's likely to see Peru and Colombia go the same route. That's all the forecasts are suggesting that. But the big one, of course, is Brazil. And there, the popular Lula, who you may recall, went to prison on corruption charges not that long ago. He's the left-wing leader of Brazil. He has got a very strong opponent in one of the governors there. So, who is more conservative. Be interesting to see how that all develops. The point about all of this is go and read the piece. It's on BizNews. It's excellent. And then finally, for your reading matter for today, there's a particularly good piece about the UK. Many of us know the UK. Some of us have even lived in the UK for a period. And it has very close links to South Africa. The bemusement for those of us who have been closer to that country is how are they going to continue to fund the social benefits, which are extreme, if they have an ever-growing base of recipients of those benefits and this backlash towards immigration, which are the people who are actually funding it. What I mean by that is it's quite simple. It's an aging population, and as people get older, they use more of the national resources on their health, and the UK has national health insurance, which our dear friends in the ANC want to try and repeat in South Africa. Be that as it may, when it comes to the UK, the big issue that's happened in the most recent past is that more people have died in 2015 than have been born. So you got that on the one hand, a shrinking population. It's the first time this has happened since COVID, which you would have understood. The Conservative government after COVID made up for this by opening the borders, really, primarily to Ukrainians and people from Hong Kong in 2023, but others as well. And they had a net gain for the UK of about 1 million people that year. But that's now being contracted down. And last year, or in the 12 months to the end of June, according to this piece, which we're publishing today, there were only 204,000 net immigrants into the UK, and that's not enough to balance the books, as it were. What happens is people come into the workforce and they contribute very high taxes, which then fund the national health insurance and the social benefits for the older people. Now, the older people are swelling and growing in size, that cohort, whereas Nigel Farage is politically supported by an ever-growing number of people who say, stop the immigration into the UK. They kind of don't make the connection. They don't join the dots between, well, if you don't have immigrants, then you're not going to have social benefits, or you're not going to be able to afford social benefits, because if your working pool or your pool of workers is contracting, then how are you going to pay for this expanding group of people who take out of the pot? Somebody's going to have to join the dots at some point in time. It's a piece on BizNews that it's well worth having a look at. Chris Stain today had an interview earlier this morning with Jonathan Deal, who's always very popular in the community. So there's another one that you can go onto this site to watch. And then we have a piece from the Daily Friend where Helen Ziller has investigated City Power and the way that City Power was fawning over Cyril Ramaphosa's foreign guests for the G20, but abusing and continuing to abuse the locals who live in Johannesburg, who actually pay the bills. She says that City Power is held together by duct tape. And, well, she knows she's got a big job ahead if she were to become mayor in, what, 11 months' time? Well, I'm going to leave it there for today. Keep an eye on your premium newsletter for links to the freshest published content, which I've covered, or some of it anyway, in this discussion. Thanks for trusting us with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. Until tomorrow, cheerio.